Welcome to The Value of Knowing, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of legal complexity and opportunity on the vibrant continent of Africa. Stay tuned for expert insights and a closer look at the legal landscape in Africa, where Bowmans helps its clients to manage legal complexity and unlock opportunity. That's The Value of Knowing.
I'm Chloe Lopesha, knowledge and learning lawyer at Bowmans in South Africa, specializing in employment law and data protection. In this digital age, personal data has become one of the most valuable commodities, and data protection and cybersecurity risks have been ranked as one of the top business risks facing organizations globally. The rapid adoption of digital technologies has led to an urgent need for robust data protection frameworks that safeguard privacy rights, while at the same time facilitating international trade and the free flow of information across borders. Since the adoption of the European General Data Protection Regulation, or the EU GDPR, which has had a global impact on how international businesses process, handle, and protect personal data, several African countries have followed suit and have developed their own data protection laws, each of which are at different stages in their regulatory journeys. Bowmans has recently published the latest edition of its Africa Guide to Data Protection, where we discuss the legal landscape in 12 African jurisdictions. Today, I'm going to be exploring with my guests from Kenya, South Africa, and Zambia some of the key legal considerations and compliance issues highlighted in that guide. They are also going to unpack in more detail some of the latest developments in their jurisdictions and the recent initiatives and enforcement actions that have been taken by regional regulators to help our clients navigate compliance in this important area. Joining me on the episode today, I have Nadine Mather, partner in our employment and benefits practice based in Johannesburg, who heads up our interdisciplinary and cross-jurisdictional data protection group. We also have Ariana Azayas, director in the IP and technology team in Nairobi, and Joshua Mamulima, a partner in our corporate team based in Lusaka, both of whom are also members of our data protection group. They all have a wealth of experience in advising clients on all aspects of data protection compliance. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you, Chloe. It's great to be here.
Thank you, Chloe. It's a pleasure.
Thanks, Chloe. Looking forward to discussing today.
Well, let's dive straight in. Data protection is a rapidly evolving area across the continent, and it can be difficult to keep track of where countries are in terms of their regulation. Nadine, could you perhaps set the scene for us and just give us a very high-level overview of the status of regulation in each of the 12 jurisdictions that we cover in the guide?
Yes, of course. The African countries that we surveyed are all at various stages in their regulatory journeys. Now, Ghana, Mauritius, and Kenya all have quite well-developed data protection legislation in place. We then have Nigeria, South Africa, Tanzania, and Zambia, where the data protection legislation is still relatively new and where the respective regulators are still finding their feet or are ramping up enforcement actions. More recently, in 2024, Botswana, Ethiopia, and Malawi joined the list of African countries which have enacted comprehensive data protection laws. But on the other end of the spectrum, we have Namibia, which has yet to enact a data protection framework. And whilst there is a draft bill in its early stages, the processing of personal data is still largely unregulated. In those African jurisdictions where data protection laws do exist, I think it is safe to say that, and at least broadly speaking, the same fundamental principles apply when it comes to the processing of personal data, which principles align with those set out in the European GDPR, such as the requirement to process personal data lawfully, fairly, and in a transparent manner, your principles relating to minimalism, accuracy, and purpose limitations, and of course the need to ensure appropriate security safeguards are in place when processing personal data.
Thanks, Nadine. That's a very helpful basis for our discussion today. Now, with these principles in mind, what I'd like to highlight in our conversation are some of the more administrative compliance items that organizations need to take, as this is one of the areas where there's quite a bit of divergence across the continent, and then focus on the security piece, and specifically data breaches, as we know that this is one of the key risks facing our clients. I'd like to start with registration requirements. Joshua, I believe that the registration of data controllers and data processors is something that has recently received quite a lot of attention in Zambia. Could you outline for us the legal position and recent developments in this regard?
So in Zambia, the Data Protection Act of 2021 requires any person who controls or processes or intends to control or process personal data to register as a data controller or as a data processor with the Office of the Data Protection Commissioner, which is a regulatory body responsible for the regulation of data protection and privacy in Zambia. The first Data Protection Commissioner was appointed in June 2023. And then from there, it's been more of sensitization and recruitment to make the office to be operational. And now it is operational. Recently, the Office of the Data Protection Commission initiated an online registration process for data controllers and processors, requiring all data processors and controllers to be registered by the 30th of April of 2025. This deadline was then extended to 31st May 2025. Even though there's never been a formal extension to that deadline, I think that has been set as the due date for everyone to exercise. We haven't seen any notice from the Office of Data Protection whether they would accept late submission or what would happen for anyone who submits the applications after that. Nonetheless, it's very important to take note that failure to register is an offense punishable by a fine of approximately $7,000 and or imprisonment to up to 5 years for the directors. So we do anticipate that with that, the Office of Data Protection, some form of enforcement may have to follow soon. I may also have to add here, Chloe, that recently there's a new legislation that's been passed by the Zambian government, which is the Cybersecurity Act of 2025. I mention this act because it deals with an aspect of critical information and information infrastructure. So the act requires the regulator to specify that information, which if it compromised, it can disrupt the Zambia's economy. If you are dealing with such information, there's a requirement that you register as a data controller of that information with a separate agency referred to as the Zambia Cybersecurity Agency.
Thanks, Joshua. That's very useful. Ariana, how does Kenya approach registration, and are there any nuances there that businesses should be aware of?
So the Kenyan Act is the Data Protection Act of 2019. And under that act, data controllers and processors are obviously also required to be registered with the regulator here, which is called the Office of the Data Protection Commissioner, more informally, the ODPC. So although the ODPC has discretion to prescribe the thresholds for mandatory registration based on the nature of industry, for example, the volumes of data processed and whether sensitive personal data is being processed. We had subsequent regulations which were enacted, and these are specifically touching on registration of data controllers and processors. And these registration regulations contain applicable thresholds in this regard. So organizations do need to consider these regulations in order to determine whether or not registration is in fact a requirement. In practice, however, most entities do register and are required to register. So for example, you know, whilst the Act requires all data controllers and processors to register, the regulations specify that certain sectors will be subject to these mandatory registration requirements, regardless of size or turnover. And some of these sectors include those operating within the gaming industry, any entities operating educational institutions, hospitality and industry firms, excluding tour guides, however, property management, provision of financial services and telecommunications network. But there is a more exhaustive list in the registration regulations. Entities that employ less than 10 people and have an annual turnover of less than 5 million, which is about $40,000, are exempt from registration. And I think our understanding is that this is intended to really protect those SMEs.
Registration requirements in respect of data controllers or data processors also exist in Ethiopia, Ghana, Malawi, Mauritius, Tanzania, Nigeria, and Uganda, although the requirements in some of these jurisdictions, like in Kenya, have certain thresholds that must be met before registration becomes mandatory. Nadine, South Africa here is a bit of an outlier, isn't it?
Yes, somewhat. In South Africa, data controllers, which are referred to as responsible parties under the South African Protection of Personal Information Act, or what we refer to as POPIA, and data processors, which are referred to as operators, are not in fact required to be registered with the information regulator. However, all responsible parties, regardless of form or size, are required to appoint and register an information officer with the information regulator. Now, the regulator has developed an online portal for purposes of registration, which registration process is free and is user-friendly. Now, in this regard, and by default, the information officer of a responsible party will be the head of the body, such as your chief executive officer or managing director, unless another person has been authorized in writing to act as the information officer. And an information officer may also delegate her or his duties to one or more deputy information officers, in which case those deputies must also be registered with the information regulator. I understand that a similar position applies in Botswana, where data controllers are not required to be registered, but they are required to appoint a data protection officer. The key difference here, Chloe, however, is that in Botswana, a data protection officer is only required to be registered in certain circumstances. So, for example, where the processing is carried out by a public body, or the data controller's core processing activities concern sensitive personal information or the systematic monitoring of data subjects on a large scale.
Thanks, Nadine. Joshua, data protection officers are also required in Zambia, aren't they?
That's right, Chloe. They are required in Zambia, and the law specifically requires that a data controller or a processor must appoint a data protection officer. There's a requirement that in the application, when you're submitting for registration as a data controller processor, you must indicate in that application who your data protection officers will be. And these may either be individuals or a corporate entity. We are yet to get clarity on how the appointment with corporate entity works as a data protection officer. So you just indicate, but the regulator doesn't have to formally approve. They just want to know that that position is filled. And also it must be a person who directly reports to the chief executive officer or the managing director. So I think what's very key to note for Zambia is that you just have to have someone in place. You don't need to submit that person for approval with the regulator. That's the case and position in Zambia, Chloe.
Thanks, Joshua. And Ariana, what about Kenya? Is there a similar requirement for the appointment of a data protection officer?
Yeah, so the position in Kenya is a bit different. Whilst the Act does make provision for the designation of data protection officers, the obligation is not mandatory and really does depend on the conditions and activities of the controller or processor. For instance, a small business that processes minimal personal data may not be required to appoint a DPO. However, a larger entity handling, for example, sensitive medical records, or a financial institution processing large volumes of personal and transactional data would be strongly advised to designate a DPO due to the nature and scale of their data processing activities. It's also worth highlighting that all entities applying for registration are required to provide the details of a DPO as a mandatory part of the application process. However, as at the date of recording today, in practice, the ODPC requires this to be at a minimum a contact or a representative that can be contactable. They don't necessarily have to have been appointed as a DPO.
Very useful. Thanks, Ariana. I'd like to move on now to data breaches. Now, when it comes to the obligation to report a data breach, it seems that across Africa, broadly speaking, there are two approaches. Nadine, could you explain these two approaches and what POPIA requires specifically when a data breach occurs?
The two approaches essentially hinge on whether or not the legislation prescribes a materiality threshold when it comes to the requirement to report a data breach. Now, certain legislation similar to your European GDPR imposes a materiality threshold in terms of which a data breach must reach a certain level of significance before it triggers reporting obligations. This threshold is typically based on, for example, the number of affected data subjects or the potential for serious harm caused by the data breach. The other approach applies where there is no prescribed materiality threshold, and the reporting obligations are then triggered regardless of the nature or the significance of the breach. Now, when it comes to South Africa, POPIA does not currently prescribe a materiality threshold, and the obligation to report a data breach arises where there are reasonable grounds to believe that the personal information of a data subject has been accessed or acquired by an unauthorized person. This would accordingly cover situations such as a hacking incident, but could also be something as simple as an employee sending personal information to the wrong customer. So in these circumstances, the responsible party has a legal obligation to notify both the information regulator and the affected data subjects to the extent that the identity of the data subjects is known. Now, there is no specific time frame prescribed in POPIA for the notification. Safe to state that the notification must be made as soon as reasonably possible after the discovery of the data breach, taking into account the legitimate needs of law enforcement or any measures that are reasonably necessary to determine the scope of the breach and to restore the integrity of the organization's information system. Now, I understand that other jurisdictions such as Ethiopia, Ghana, Malawi, Mauritius, and Uganda all follow a similar approach where there is no prescribed materiality threshold.
Ariana, Kenya is one of those jurisdictions where there is a materiality threshold when it comes to data breach reporting. Could you explain the position and highlight any other jurisdictions that have similar requirements?
So, under Kenyan law, data controllers are required to notify data breaches to the ODPC where there is a real risk of harm to the data subject. Notification must be made within 72 hours of becoming aware. Real risk has been caused if that data breach relates to a data subject's full name or ID number and certain classes of personal information, including salary information, financial information, including net worth, health information, information about adoption history and passwords and so on. The categories or classes of breached information deemed to be considered as constituting a real risk of harm if breached are set out in further detail in the general regulations. In circumstances, notification must also be made to the impacted data subject, and data processors must also inform data controllers of any breaches without delay and where reasonably practicable within 48 hours of becoming aware of the breach. I am aware that there are similar reporting requirements which exist in Botswana and Nigeria, where reporting is required in respect of a breach that is likely to result in inverted commas, a risk to the rights and freedoms of data subjects.
Thanks, Ariana. And what about the reporting of cybercrime? Is this also regulated in Kenya? And if so, what are some of the practical implications for businesses?
Yes, and cybercrime has really become a hot topic in Kenya just because of the increased nature of the threats. Cybercrime is regulated under the Computer Misuse and Cybercrimes Act, as well as the DPA, which we've been discussing. And we also have new recent regulations called the Computer Misuse and Cybercrimes Critical Information Infrastructure and Cybercrime Regulations, it's a mouthful, as well as a new Kenya National Cybersecurity Strategy, which was launched recently as well. So what the CMCA has is that it imposes a reporting obligation on any person who operates a computer system or a computer network, whether public or private, to immediately inform the National Computer and Cybercrimes Coordination Committee, called the NC4, of any attacks, intrusions, and other disruptions to the functioning of another computer system or network within 24 hours of such attack, intrusion, or disruption. Because the reporting requirement is quite broad, we do advise our clients who inquire about the applicable legislative framework, that they need to have clear internal processes for identifying and escalating incidences quickly to ensure compliance.
Joshua, you mentioned earlier that there is some recent legislation that was enacted in Zambia around cybercrime. What should businesses in Zambia be aware of when it comes to cybercrime reporting?
We have recently enacted the Cybersecurity Act, which requires anyone responsible for critical information to report any perceived or actual cyber incident to the cyber security agents immediately. Here now, we're not dealing with every business owner, but only those who are dealing with critical information and information infrastructure, being information which, if compromised, could disrupt Zambia's economy or the delivery of essential services. So looking at industries such as the banking and finance, health, transport, pension and insurance, ICT, energy, and mining. So businesses definitely in those sectors, they've got this strict obligation of reporting not just the cyber crime, but even perceived or an actual occurrence of cybersecurity incidences. So what that act also requires is that such businesses should ensure that they've got some form of robust monitoring and reporting mechanism in place to ensure that once there's at an incident, they're able to report to the Zambia Cybersecurity Agency as soon as possible.
Nadine, what about the South African framework? What does that look like in terms of cybercrime?
In South Africa, we have implemented a Cyber Crimes Act, which act effectively criminalizes various types of cyber crimes, such as cyber extortion, unlawfully acquiring a password, cyber fraud, or theft of incorporeal property. Now, in terms of the Cyber Crimes Act, specifically electronic communications service providers and financial institutions have a legal obligation to report cyber crimes to the South African Police Service within 72 hours of becoming aware of them. But save for this requirement on electronic communication service providers and financial institutions, there is no general obligation on other organizations to report cyber crimes in terms of the Act.
Thanks, Nadine. Before we come to the end of our discussion, I'd like us to discuss some recent developments and current enforcement trends and what the regulators in each of your jurisdictions have been getting up to. Nadine, perhaps we can start with you. What have you been seeing in South Africa in this regard?
Certainly. So the South African Information Regulator has become increasingly proactive in recent years. We have seen a number of enforcement notices issued against several organizations and two administrative fines actually being imposed on organizations which have failed to comply with an enforcement notice. Now, whilst the information regulator may impose an administrative fine of up to 10 million rand, the highest fine imposed to date has been in an amount of 5 million. Now, the regulator is also actively conducting assessments of an organization's compliance with the provisions of POPIA, and this is both in response to complaints received or simply on its own initiative. These assessments do not take the form of a dawn raid. Rather, organizations are given prior notice that an assessment will take place. And the assessments generally are by way of in-person engagements between representatives of the information regulator and the organization concerned and require the production of various documents to demonstrate compliance with POPIA. Now, another recent development is that the POPIA regulations actually recently received a facelift, with the information regulator publishing amendments to the regulations in April this year. So the amended regulations seek to enhance data subject rights whilst also ensuring organizations adhere to stricter compliance requirements. So I think in summary, we're seeing a lot more activity in the data protection space in South Africa, and we are seeing an increased focus on ensuring that data subjects are aware of and can easily exercise their data subject rights whilst organizations are coming under more scrutiny by the information regulator to ensure compliance with the requirements of POPIA.
Thanks, Nadine. Very useful for responsible parties to be aware of those developments. Ariana, what are some of the key developments and enforcement trends that you're seeing in Kenya that businesses should be aware of?
So the Kenyan authorities are really demonstrating a commitment to ensuring the proper regulation of personal data. The ODPC has been very active in publishing various guidance notes to aid in the implementation and interpretation of the Act. Some examples include guidance notes for electoral purposes, registration requirements, and on data protection impact assessments, as well as sector-specific guidance notes which touch on education, health, and communication. Since the enactment of the Act, and more notably from 2022 onwards, the ODPC has increasingly exercised its investigative and enforcement powers, issuing several decisions addressing compliance with the DPA, particularly regarding lawful consent, exercise of data subject rights, and reliance on appropriate legal bases for data processing. Some examples include a recent determination in respect of a complaint against a local photography studio that had been using the complainant's image to promote services on WhatsApp and Instagram. And despite repeated takedown requests, the studio continued with its unauthorized use. And ultimately, the regulator determined that the continued publishing of the image without consent constituted a breach of data protection rights. The ruling by the ODPC was that the studio should erase the image and impose a fine of about 500,000 Kenya shillings, which is about $4,000, underscoring the obligation to really obtain express and informed consent when processing personal images. We've also had a number of determinations actually issued in favor of students who have filed complaints against their educational institutions. Again, all relates to kind of unlawful processing or use of images without appropriate consent mechanisms in the context of marketing material. Interestingly, the Kenyan courts have also been dealing with data protection matters and have offered clarity on the right to privacy and enforcement of the DPA in several recent decisions. Notably, the High Court has upheld the right to privacy in a case where five petitioners successfully challenged the unauthorized use of their graduation photos and college advertisements. The court affirmed that commercial use of personal image without consent infringed the constitutional rights to privacy and dignity under the Kenyan Constitution. And then finally, helpfully, the High Court ruled that judicial review was not the proper avenue to challenge ODPC decisions, and instead the determinations had to be appealed under the Act, under the Data Protection Act, and the court emphasized the principle of exhaustion of statutory remedies and struck out the application for lack of jurisdiction.
Very interesting, Ariana, specifically around the use of photographs and how much scrutiny that's been under. Joshua, with the ODPC's office in Zambia now being fully operational, how is enforcement shaping up in your jurisdiction?
So for Zambia, I think the enforcement is still in its early stages, as mentioned earlier. Yes, the Office of the Data Protection Commission is fully operational and has these extensive powers to enforce significant fines of up to 2% of the annual turnover, whichever is higher. So as the regulation continues to mature, what we expect to see, I think, is from two aspects. From the regulatory aspect, we like to see more enforcement actions, particularly around registration, appointment of data protection officers, and breach reporting. On the other hand, the second aspect of it, which we are likely to see more, is from the consumer side, the data subjects, and that is more of a data subject complaints. As they are getting more aware of their rights under the Act, we should expect more data subjects bringing up actions or making all these complaints against a number of businesses. And that is why from our end, we usually make that call that it's very important that the businesses is aware of its obligation under the Act, as well as what rights do data subjects have, such that when a data subject make a request, they're able to comply with it, knowing that should they not proceed to comply with the Act, there are significant fines, not only fines as well, but also there's an aspect of reputation risk on the business. So that's where we are, Chloe. We do look forward to the day when we have cases before the High Court dealing with data protection. That time is not now, but we are very sure that it's coming very soon for Zambia.
Thanks, Joshua. I think when it comes to Zambia, we just got to have to watch the space.
Exactly.
Well, thank you very much, Nadine, Ariana, and Joshua, for making the time to join me today. It's been great speaking to you on this important topic. If you would like to find out more about data protection compliance in any of the jurisdictions mentioned during this discussion, you can find our Africa Guide to Data Protection on our website, and please do reach out to any member of our data protection group. Details can also be found on the Bowman's website.
If you would like to get in touch or find out more about Bowman's, please visit bowmanslaw.com.